Accession number 32971, Reel 4.
Bill Machen, tape 3. Bill, so you're telling me that they, during the night on the beaches at Dunkirk, you were trying to sleep in the dunes?
Yes, and...
Did you have to try and make a sort of, any, like a burrow to keep away from the...
Oh yes, we dug little holes.
Yeah.
And got in them. But of course it was difficult in the sand dunes because it was sand and it collapsed. So it wasn't like in the field or anything like that where we used to dig them. So we just couldn't do anything about it. But we didn't get bombed in the night, of course. It was in the daytime when the Stukas came over died bombing.
So in the morning you would join a queue? Or try to join a queue? You told me you had a problem with that didn't you?
of course I got fed up with that. I went to two or three, tried to get in two or three queues, and some of the officers were getting quite nasty about it, you know. Get away, you know, you're not in this regiment. Which was ridiculous. I said to him, I'm in the so-and-so British Army, aren't I, you know.
So did you find the rest of your company, did they straggle off, come down in bits and pieces down to the, over those few days?
I think the main body of our company was together. You see, I was in charge of a section, as I said before, 12 men and 6 vehicles. Mm. And the section was part of a platoon, and the platoon was part of the company. You probably got 4 or 5 platoons in the company, and then in a platoon you'd got probably 4 or 5 sections. And my section was allocated the job of taking 25 pounders to this certain ammunition artillery battery.
Yes, you said then you were chasing them around.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, what the rest of the company was doing, I don't know. But I can't remember. My job was looking after this certain battery. So consequently, I got down the beach on my own with my little section, and that's how we were till we got back home. Now, when we got back home, I found out that most of the company had stuck together and been together. I don't know what happened with them. When I got to Mansfield, you know, we were swapping tales and saying, "Oh no, we've." So.
Had any of them got captured, do you think?
Oh yes, I got some, I got 2 or 3 killed who were in Dunkirk Cemetery. I've been back since, and seen his graves. And I think 2 or 3 got captured. Yeah. It was so scattered and flexible, you know, you were all over the place. So it weren't as though we were all together and just going forward like it did in the First World War.
So when you got back to Mansfield, as you described earlier, after your eight weeks leave, you started to reform?
I didn't get 8 weeks leave.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you got...
Six weeks? No, didn't get any leave.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, not after Dunkirk. We got to Mansfield. Well, I think I've told you, we landed this train, we got on at Folkestone, eventually landed up at Yeovil, and we were in this camp. Artillery camp, searchlight battery camp at Yeovil, and they we slept for a couple of days and they're tired, and there's chaps from all units of the British Army there, like myself, 2 or 3, you know, from a different unit, and we slept for a couple of days, and they called us out on the barrack square on parade and read lists out of names and companies and say, right, so-and-so, Corporal Machen, your company is reforming at Mansfield in Nottingham. So we then got on a train and down the station onto the train and went to Mansfield and found out where the company was reforming in King Edward Road Schools, Mansfield. I remember that because I often go past them now when I see my son who lives there. And we got there, and of course we'd. I remember I got no cap and only bits of uniform, you know. and got sorted out. Then I know it got after being there 2 or 3 days. I went to the sergeant major and I said, look, my wife only lives 10 miles down the road at workshop. Can I go home for a couple of nights? He said, not unless you get properly dressed, find yourself a cap. I haven't got a cap. She got lost in that. So anyway, I got a cap from somewhere and he said, right. So he let me go off for a couple of days. And I had to hitchhike out of Mansfield to workshop. Thinking, well, my wife will be there with the mother. And this lorry driver, he charged this lorry and he took me to workshop. And I said, I don't know whether my wife will be here or whether she'd gone to Doncaster's, to my mother's, because she used to spend half a time there, is he? He said, well, look, I'll wait at the end of the street. And if she has, he said, I'm going through Doncaster. Very good, I know him from lorry down. He said, I'm going through Doncaster. He said, I'll drop me off there. Well, he dropped me off at the end of the street where my wife's mother lived. I went down, and the wife's mother there, and the wife's sister and father. I said, Marty's gone to Doncaster. She went yesterday. She was expecting you to be there, because she'd got a card that I'd written on the train from Folkestone. The women there on the stations giving you cards, and you wrote, I landed safely and see you soon. And they posted it for you, and that was it. And she got this card, so I thought, well, it'll be coming to Doncaster. So she up sticks and went to Doncaster, you see. Anyway, so I went, I had a cup of tea and all like that, and I remember I got a cent, and my sister-in-law gave me 2 shillings, you know. And then I went back to this lorry driver's waiting at the end of the road. Oh no, he came in for a cup of tea, I think. And off we went to Doncaster. I remember offering this lorry driver a shilling, out me 2 shillings my sister-in-law had given me, but he wouldn't take it. And he dropped me to Doncaster. Again, the race course there, and my mother didn't live far from there.
So that was the first time you'd seen your son?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that must have been very emotional for you.
Yes. That's right. And I remember, I looked a picture, my wife did. Looked a picture. Oh, and my father was working for the Doncaster Council in those days. And he was on Doncaster Racecourse with all the other council workers, putting in posts all over the racecourse. They did this expecting the Germans to come over with glides and all open spaces, as far as they were putting these posts in. And my father was on the racecourse doing that job. And when my wife, a couple of days before, and when my wife arrived at my mother's to say that I was safe, first thing they did was go over to the racecourse, which is only about half a mile away, where my father's working, and tell him. You know. That's all the story goes.
So you had a really nice reunion. You had a nice reunion, the first time you'd seen her for...
Oh, yeah. Seven months? Yeah, 7 or 8 months.
First time you'd seen your child as well?
Yeah.
Very special time for you. Very special time for you.
Oh, it was, yes, it was. And then, I remember the next day at my mother's, my friend who I previously mentioned, who was in the Cameron Islanders and with me in Palestine, and I mentioned to you previously in the recording, he got killed at St. Valerie, I think it was, the 51st Island Division. No, he didn't get killed, I beg your pardon, he got wounded. And his mother came over, she'd heard nothing from him, and his mother came over to my mother's while I was there to inquire if I'd seen him. Have you seen Tommy? I said, well, I'm afraid I haven't. Anyway, later on it came, they'd been badly wounded in both legs, taken prisoner. And he died as a prisoner of war. Tragic that was. Very good friend of mine.
Remember you said earlier in the tape about your good friend, the German boy. Had you been worried that you might meet him in Normandy?
Oh, We're at Dunkirk now.
Dunkirk,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well, yes, well, in that little story I wrote, I was always in the back of my mind, you know, of course, it, I don't know, millions to one chance, of course, but I was in the back of my mind, what if I happened to meet Paul? Yeah, I mean, he's my school friend. And, I mean, at that age, you didn't care whether they were Germans or Dutch or whatever they were. I mean, and he'd done me, you know, and he was coming. Anyway, I thought, oh, what if I meet Paul? What do we do, you know? Anyway, I didn't.
So after you'd stayed with your wife, you had to go back to Mansfield?
Oh, yes, yes. I was only home for a weekend. And that's right. And what happened with some friends? I had some friends who kept a public house in Doncaster. And they had a relation who lived in Mansfield. This, the landlady of his pub, her sister kept a, lived in Mansfield. And they happened to be over in Doncaster that weekend, staying at this public house. And they said, when are you going back? I said, we've got to go back. I've got to go back on Sunday night. I said, well, we're going back home. We'll take you.
Oh, that's good.
So they took, they got a car and they took me to Mansfield. And then, of course, a couple of days later, my wife went back to work, so on the bus, I suppose.
So were you able, in the, while you were at Mansfield, to see her on a regular basis?
Well, that's what I'm going to say now. Now these people who lived at Mansfield, quite near King Edward Road School, where we were billeted, they said, look, Bill, why don't you get Marjorie, that's my wife, and the baby, over to Mansfield and stay with us.
Oh, how nice.
And you can, if you can get out sleeping past, you know. So, right, so arranged that, and the, my wife came over with the baby and what belonged to she had in those days, to this house in Mansfield. And they wouldn't give me a sleeping out pass, you know. But anyway, I used to do, you know, Mr. Wang, but, and I had to go home at night after everything was settled at school and fix it with my mates, you know. And then I used to get back next morning dead early before the sergeant major and I got back. That's how it went on. It was very nice, you know, yeah. And my son, eldest son, lives between Nottingham and Mansfield now. And when I go over to see him, I see the place where he used to stay in the school. And
brings back the memories, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So how long were you at Mansfield?
Let me see now. Beginning of June. To 2 months, till August. And by that time we'd got re-equipped, new vehicles, weapons. And in fact, the guns we got, the rifles, was Canadian Ross rifles. And they're from the First World War. And they'd shipped them over from Canada with, this is what you call lease and lend. And Canada and America and them, they send stuff over, you know, and 12 us out. And we got these Canadian Ross rifles. And then August, we got orders to move.
Where did you go then?
We set off. We made for Glasgow. The first night halfway, we stayed at Catterick Camp, a big army, peacetime army camp, Catterick Camp. We stayed overnight there, and set off next morning, and we got to Glasgow, and we spent a night in the exhibition centre at Glasgow. That year, there'd been the British exhibition, you know, and we danced at Glasgow. We slept in what was the exhibition centre that night. I remember that. And then we got on the boat, on the ship at Glasgow next morning. And we sailed to Belfast. Belfast. And then, you want all this, dear?
Yes.
You want all this detail?
Yeah.
And then from Belfast, we drove our convoy down to Bangor. we set off for Bangor, County Down, beautiful little seaside resort on the end of Belfast Lock. I've been back there since, and we were stationed on Bangor Town Football Ground. We put tents up, of course, in tents. It was summer, it was August. But. And we were in Bangor in those tents till, say, end of October, November. This is 1940.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's getting winter then, so they then moved us into billets, into houses.
Did you stay with nice people?
Oh, we didn't stay with people, we stayed in...
You accommodated the houses, yeah.
And right on the Bangor seafront, they call it Ballyhome Esplanade. And that's where we were in these houses. But just off Esplanade. Well, we're running my story now. Well then...
So what was your role there, sort of occupying force and protecting the coast?
No, our job was... that's the thing... was running to Belfast docks. Belfast was only, 8 or 10 miles away, you see. Running to Belfast docks and collecting stores and ammunition and all sorts of things. And distributing them to various units in Northern Ireland. And while we were there, this is winter 1940, the Germans came and bombed Belfast docks. And I'll never forget, they came twice. They came over, and of course, I was dead low by the time they got over at Bangor because it's only a few miles away. And they plastered Belfast docks. We went next morning with our lorries to, as we usually did, with a job to find the docks. It was terrible, all around the docks and the houses, and hundreds of people killed. You know. We assisted with clearing up the mess and all this business. And then they came again 2 nights later. You know, and did the same. And that was that. It was terrible, that was. And
gave you an appreciation of what the civilians were putting up with back home.
Oh, yes, yeah. And then, right. And then it came out on orders that if we could find accommodation, we could have our wives over. Such a rush then by the lads all to find accommodation, which was difficult to get. But there was a big, boarding house, whatever you call it, guest house, on Ballyhome Esplanade, right on the front, overlooking Belfast Lock, beautiful position. And it was empty. And I found out it belonged to some people in Belfast. I got my motorbike, which I shouldn't have done, but I did, and went to Belfast, contacted them. And I said, look, I'm in Bangor and I'd like to get my wife and baby over for a few weeks. And what about, could you let her over the house? So, yes, all right then. Fully furnished guest house, I don't know, about 5 or 6 bedrooms. So, and what was I? You had to charge me a ridiculous figure it was. Something like 30 shillings a week rent, you know. Well, that was a lot out of my pay, so I got a friend of mine, he used to live at Plymouth anyway, his wife, he was going to get his wife over, and we said, well, we'll go out, we'll both live in this house, which we did do. He got his wife over, he had no children, and I got my wife and baby over, and she came from Haysham near Liverpool, to Belfast on the ship. And next morning I got down to Belfast dock waiting for her, you know. And I was never forget, she was stood on the ship's deck in Belfast dock looking over. And they wouldn't let us go on board, you know, to Greenland. And she, it must have been 2 hours she was stood there before the started to come. Anyway, then we got to Bangor and she's out there up to... And that would be what, just before Christmas, that's right, Christmas 4th, just out there for Christmas.
How did you manage at Christmas with getting rations and things?
Well, she had her ration cards, you know. But we didn't get rations. We had to eat in the army mess room, you see. But of course, I used to manage to get a couple of loaves and various things, illiterately, from the cookhouse, you know, and you'd take them home. Oh, and of course, we used to go on guard at night, and I'd be corporal in charge of the guard, and at night time, you drew the rations for the night for the guard. And I always got more than I should have done, and just take home half a loaf of bread and a bit of corned beef and all. Anyway, we got through the manage. And things weren't quite as bad in Northern Ireland as it was at home for rations. You know, they're a bit more easier. So my wife and this other lady, they used to go shopping into Belfast and Bangor and get various things. And we got them all right. And the Christmas dinner, I think she managed to get a cockerel or something somewhere for Christmas dinner.
So life ticked along quite happily at that time.
Yes, it was very nice. Of course, I was in the morning. I used to. Of course, we got sleeping out past then, you see. In the morning, I went reported to my platoon. That was my platoon was on Donaghadee Road, and there's about four houses there just being built and not occupied, just being built before the war started. And off the road, you went down sort of a drive to get behind them, and there's a terrific space, which were going to be the gardens, but they hadn't been divided off, they're all one big space. And I had my lorries down there, and the men were billeted in these four houses, my platoon. And of course, you have to get there every morning, start off doing the normal work routine.
Did you enjoy being a corporal? Did you find it easy to give orders and...
Yeah, well, of course, being a regular soldier, we found it a lot easier than the chaps who got called up and all that, because we knew what army discipline was. You know, we'd had it, 1934, we'd had it for 6 years then, you know. And anyway, it wasn't long before I was made sergeant then.
Did that mean extra pay?
Pardon?
Did you get extra pay?
Oh, yes, yeah. Oh, yeah, rates of pay, you know, you got rates of pay for drivers, corporals, sergeants, and upwards.
So what extra responsibilities did you have then?
Well, the responsibility then, you are then in charge of the platoon, the whole platoon, which in those days consisted of about A, B, C, workshops, HQ, five platoons. And about 100 to 150 vehicles. No lorries, motorbikes, 100 to 150 vehicles. And that was the platoon sergeant responsibility, you see. And then you had, above me then, there was a platoon officer. You had a platoon officer, you know, a lieutenant or captain.
Did you get on well with your officers?
Oh, yes. You see, I better not put this down.
No, go on.
A lot of them came straight from Sandhurst, you know. They hadn't got a clue. And the first thing they did when they got posted to the company, and they were always getting changed around, fresh ones in, fresh ones out, I think, more was to train them. And first thing they'd do with these young officers, look round, oh, we're not having that, we want to change this, Sergeant. No, we don't want that. And they wanted to change everything. You know, their silly ideas. Of course, we were all sweats then, I mean, 6 or 7 years servicing, and we'd been about. Our company was one of the most efficient companies in the Royal Army Service Corps, because it was a number 35 company, a peacetime company that had got mobilised for war, of course, but were all regular soldiers or regular reservists, and we knew our stuff, you see. These young officers had come along, they were going to change all sorts of things, ideas they'd got at Sandhurst. I said to get on well with them. I used to get them in the platoon office, one room in the house for a platoon office, again. Shut the doors, nobody listening. I said, now look here. You're here today and gone tomorrow. I've been in this company since before the war started. And up to now, we've done very well. So we don't want any of your silly ideas. Well, you shouldn't talk to me like that, you know. I said, well, I'm doing. There's nobody else listening.
They relied on you so much, there's not much they could say. They rely on you so much, there's not much they could say.
Well, no, of course they did, yes. They. And they, as I say, they're always changing around because we were such an efficient company. They sent them to us from to get experience, more or less, you know, after a few weeks at Sandhurst or Officers Training Company, wherever they were. And I knew this. But at the same time, they tried to alter things, and, you know, with a silly idea. You see, 35 Company was a regular company, and a rather unique position I was in. I joined 35 Company in June 1939. And I was still in 35 Company in March 46 when I got demobbed.
Gosh.
Not many people did that in the war.
No.
In June 39 I was a driver. In March 46 when I got demobbed, 6.5 years later, I was a sergeant major of the same company, you see. Mm. I'd gone through all the ranks in the same company, which is unique, you know, because
yes.
Usually got posted away or something like that, you know.
So how long were you in Northern Ireland?
Oh, right, Northern Ireland now then. From Belfast, when was it? In, I think it was September 41, we moved to Hillsborough. That is where the governor of Northern Ireland has his residence, Hillsborough Castle. We moved there. And doing training we're still an ammunition company, but was then known as 3rd Corps Ammunition Company. In France, at Dunkirk, before Dunkirk, we were 1st Corps Ammunition Company, but in Ireland we were 3rd Corps Ammunition Company, and we were doing what you call the milk run. We were to collect ammunition and things coming from into the docks at Belfast and distribute it round various units in Northern Ireland, you know, artillery units, infantry units, RA units, everything. Artillery shells, 303s, rifle ammunition, 303s. To the RAs we'd take explosives like Aminol and TNT, various explosives.
Quite dangerous, then.
And mines. We distributed ammunition all over the place. Got it in the middle room.
How long were you at Hillsborough?
Hillsborough, we were there September 41. So. I'll interfere them. To January 43. Now, during that time again at Hillsborough, provided we could find accommodation, we could get our wives over. So, right, I found accommodation. Oh, this was in 1942. I found accommodation with my wife at Hillsborough, in a house that belonged to a Mr. McNulty, and he was the agent for the Duke of Abercorn, the governor of Northern Ireland, who lived in the castle up top of the hill. That's where royalty go now, you know. And he lived in the house, I remember, at the bottom of the hill, Fairford House, I've seen that. And I got accommodation there for my wife and my son, who by then was about two and a half, you see. Now, while we was there, we were getting a bit fed up in Northern Ireland.